You're tuned to The Drive on your 24/7 home of the Black and Gold, Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome back to The Drive. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. We're pleased to be joined now by somebody from Football Outsiders. They do the yearly almanac. That would be Mike
Jenner. Just came out, yeah.
Yeah, just came out, and very excited. That's a lot of reading there that Matt and I have been doing over the last week or so since
that
came out.
It's like my favorite part of summer, to be honest with you, is when the almanac comes out. I've read every one probably for 20 years in a row now. I think even before, maybe everyone's ever been out, to be honest with you. And I'm knocking out, I don't know, four teams a day and really concentrating on them, give or take. And I've heard, Mike, I've heard a lot of you guys doing the podcast tours and talking about things you've popped up. So it's great to talk to you again, man.
It's great to talk a little football, and it's great to talk a little almanac. Yeah, it's raw. It's heavy. I'm holding it right now in my hand. It's as heavy as ever, but it is chock full of knowledge.
Real quick, I just want to mention this to people, too, that, I mean, obviously you're aware, but the almanac's a little different this year with how you guys presented it. So when I bought it, you can now click on each team and read them separately as opposed to a giant PDF file or, you know, the printout or whatever. So it's a little more digestible. I like that.
I'm glad you like it. Yeah, we entered the 20 teams here where in the past you could get a hardcover where you got a giant PDF. And giant PDFs are great, but, mm-hmm. you know, they have drawbacks. Now when you buy it online. Yeah, you click the team and the team pops up and it looks like a beautiful chapter. Looks great on tablets. Looks great on phones. And, of course, looks great on your screen as well. So it's a little more easy to navigate this year, and we're pretty proud of that.
Yeah, I like it.
Mike, a lot of good stuff in there on the Steelers, a lot of information. Matt and I went over it, I think, verbatim last week, just kind of throwing some of the stats out there. A lot of people around the league seem to be down on Pittsburgh and yet very high on the Browns. And I'm looking at it, when I was looking at the almanac, I'm like, you guys are a little less bullish on the Browns. Not that you're super high on the Steelers, but I think everybody's looking at that. I see a lot of stuff saying they're the, you know, third best team in the league. They're the, you know, they're the clear class of, you know, one of the top teams in the NFL. And you guys don't come down on that way.
Not at all, and I think it's very trendy. And people look at how the season ended and, of course, how the playoffs went. And it's like, Browns are trending up, Steelers are trending down. One team's got an old quarterback, one team's got a young quarterback. And it's easy to flip-flop them, and it's tempting to do so. Well, you know, at Football Outsiders, we crunched the numbers and looked at a couple of things, looked at a lot of things. And one of them with the Browns is they're turning over almost their entire defense. If you look at the Browns defense, 8 or 9 new starters. And some of them are great ball players. You know, Josh Johnson's a good ball player, et cetera. That doesn't bode well for their defense. Now you come to the other side, the Steelers. And yeah, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about Big Ben and all. Defense is still projected to be number one in the NFL, and what number one in the NFL by a pretty decent margin, and the best pass rush in the NFL. And there wasn't that much turnover, and we just had some news today, so some of the turnover did happen. You lose Bud Dupree, now you bring Ingram in. So you have a team that you know in the Steelers is going to consistently have that excellent defense. The Browns are doing more of a projection. Factor in the other things, and I believe we have the Steelers, I believe, ahead of the Browns in our projections.
Yeah, and one thing I've learned from Football Outsiders over the years that I believe in, but I don't think it really holds true with this team, is offense is a lot more predictable year to year than defense. I just don't know that that's true for the Steelers this year.
It's tricky, but most of our projections are similar to what we saw last year. You know, take that kind of roller coaster ride and spread it out across a season a little more normally, and that's what we see. I mean, we see the Steelers this year with Roethlisberger going back to a degree to that quick passing game. I know they have a new coordinator, and the coordinator likes to emphasize play action and some other things that I think will benefit the Steelers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because there's so many questions on the offensive line, it looks like it's going to be throw those short passes, get a lot of yaks. Throw those short passes, get a lot of yaks. Well, you can still be successful with that, and Roethlisberger can still be successful with that. You get a few less drop passes, which you almost have to get less drop passes. You get a bump from having Najee Harris in there. And it comes out to an offense that, even if it's maybe not as great as the offense looked a few times early in the season, but not as terrible as it looked late in the season against some of those opponents, and it balances out to one that should be able to complement the defense. and win some games, you know, 22-16 or things like that when they get the boost from that defense. And that's all the Steelers need to be a playoff team. Maybe not a Super Bowl contender, mm-hmm. but a playoff team.
Our guest is Mike Tanier from Football Outsiders. And Mike, you mentioned Najee Harris. Obviously, he's been a big topic here in Pittsburgh. Even before the draft, you know, you heard a lot of people saying you can't use a first-round draft pick on a running back.
Right.
But if you don't have a running back who's capable of carrying the load, you know, in this year's draft, I know Matt and I was, you know, we broke down the draft a lot, and there weren't, it just wasn't your typical draft for running backs. Where did you guys come down on the selection of Najee Harris at that spot for the
Steelers? Yeah, it's a dubious choice because, you know, the reinforcements on the offensive line, especially with guys retiring later on, that would have been a better option. Usually going for edge rusher, which the Steelers do a lot, drafting edge rushers, or going for the secondary is almost always a smarter move. And then you had to need a running back, obviously. It's something that you can address third, fourth, fifth round. And I think you're right, this was a thinner running back draft, but, you know, despite that, you can get two or three guys in later rounds, have them compete and come up with something. That said, Najee Harris is what he looks like. And while it's tricky to draft a running back in the first round, there's reasons not to do it. At least you do get their best seasons. You know, you're going to get those two or three years while he's fresh, before he gets injured, et cetera. And he looks like the guy who can be that guy. He looks like the kind of guy who can catch some passes out of the backfield, be a power runner between the tackles, do all the things you want him to do. So it's a justifiable pick, if not necessarily the most optimal pick. And my only fear for Harris, I think he's going to be a heck of a player. My only fear is he's going to have to break two tackles to get back to the line of scrimmage. And if that's the case, that's a problem for the Steelers.
Yeah, and we've talked about that a lot, and there is a lot of uncertainty with the offensive line. But there's been a couple things really missing from the running back position. Is short yardage has been a real problem. I think Harris excels in that area. You mentioned his receiving skills, which – you know, Dale and I were fortunate to see a little bit of it firsthand at minicamp. They're exceptional with a huge catching radius. I just see a lot of Lev Bell there.
There is a lot of Lev Bell, and I think you left out explosive capability.
Yeah.
You know, I think Connor could catch short passes. He was okay at that. He was a grinder. He had no explosive capability, and the guys behind him didn't, too. And what you really need from running backs occasionally is some of that breakaway potential. Lev Bell had it in both the passing game and the rushing game when he was with the program, and you can get that from him. And that's what you're looking for, hopefully, especially if you're doing short pass and yak, short pass and yak. You can't have 3.8 yards per carry from your running back. He's got to do the things. And, you know, the comparison is to Derrick Henry. He's got to do the things Derrick Henry does, which is get into the open field, stiff arm a guy out of the TV screen for you, and turn what would have been 8, 9, 10 yards into 30, 40 yards. And I think he does have that potential.
Mike, you mentioned the Steelers' defense. What does the signing of Melvin Ingram do with this? Does this make them – I don't know. I don't believe he's going to be the clear-cut starter. I believe they'll still start Alex Highsmith there.
Yeah.
But upgrading that backup position where they had Quincy Roche and Cassius Marsh behind T.J. Watson. Does this make them a much more dangerous team? I mean, it's already a very dangerous pass-rushing defense.
And that's the thing. It's funny because I'm with Aaron Schatz right now. We're in Louisville, Kentucky for a big press junket for the Football Outsiders Almanac. And we're like, punch it in. Let's do the projections right now. And it didn't change the projection very much at all, I think, Ingram in, because the Steelers are ranked number one, and they're projected to be number one, and they're projected to be number one in pass rush. So they went from, like, you know, number one to number one with a bullet. And I think they have, you know, we have a decent projection in for Highsmith in there. So what this does is it reinforces it. It makes you more comfortable with that projection that, once again, this team is going to be among the league leaders in sacks, is going to create takeaways based on their pass pressure, and you add somebody in there who maybe at this point in his career, you're right, is a wave player who comes in on third downs or passing downs. Well, passing downs are 60-65% of downs nowadays. Ingram can kind of play on the inside. He can move around a little bit. He's more versatile than Dupree was. And, you know, he had zero sacks last year, but he had a ton of hurries. He still gets that pressure. So you just get more confidence saying the Steelers are going to win a lot of games with their defense this year, enough that you say, you turn to the offense and say, okay, now what are you going to do to propel this team past, you know, 8-8 or 8-9 or 9-8 or whatever?
Mike, you did a lot of work. You did the Ravens and Bengals chapters, too. And I've read both those, of course, started with the Steelers and then stuck in the North. And I think the Bengals are really interesting. And my first question about them, was there a wrong answer between Ja'Marr Chase and Penei Sewell? I mean, I feel like either would have worked out just fine.
I don't think there was a wrong answer. I honestly think Sewell was the better answer. You know, Football Outsiders research says that teams that draft an offensive lineman in the top 10, 15, they improve. That's a way to improve. And, of course, you protect the investment with Joe Barrow. And I talk a lot about that in the chapter. That said, you can see a scenario where you put Ja'Marr Chase out there with Tyler Boyd and Higgins, and they've got some other like receivers at your 4 and 5, and you're just going to go empty backfield, attack, 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 attack. And they did add some pieces on the offensive line, and you can see that offense being more explosive. So, again, there's no wrong answer. I think there was a better answer. That said, we don't project much from the Bengals this year. This is still a team that has so many question marks on defense, that still has to sort things out on the offensive line, still has to find themselves, and does not have a proven coach. Let's be honest. We don't know really after a couple of years what we're looking for with Taylor, that we still have them fourth overall. As interesting as Barrow makes them, they're still last place, projected to be last place in a division.
Our guest is Mike Tanier from Football Outsiders. If you get a chance, check out the Football Almanac that they do. Just hundreds of pages of really just in-depth knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Well,
great stats too, that you can use, and projections, the whole deal, fantasy stuff. There's a little bit of everything in there.
Yeah,
Mike, in terms of the overall landscape in the AFC, how do you rank the teams in the AFC, the hierarchy right now?
Well, the Almanac projections have the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Ravens neck and neck at the top. I believe the order we have them in, actually, I'm not going to say it because I don't have it in front of me. Those three teams have projections around 11 wins. So they're at the top. They're all within like one-tenth of a win of each other. And then there's a gap. And then there's everybody else. And everybody else includes the Steelers. It includes the Browns. It includes the Patriots, that I think some people might be sleeping on, and it includes like the Colts and the Titans. So there's not a lot of newcomers in there. But I think that the projection system jives with what a lot of us think. Yeah, we talked a moment ago about how people have the Browns projected up there. There's a lot of reasons to think, well, they're the Browns, and that's not going to happen. Those three teams are as good as they claim to be, as good as they look, you know, on paper, and then it becomes a matter of the questions that we always ask. Okay, did the Chiefs do enough on the offensive line? Josh Allen, is he for real? Does that team have a running game, enough balance? And, of course, all the Lamar Jackson questions. Those are what we're looking at the AFC, not necessarily some newcomer piercing that conversation.
Real quick on that note, I read the Bills this morning, actually, and they're a plexiglass candidate. Can you kind of describe what that means?
Plexiglass is when you make a sudden leap forward, you tend to fall back a little bit. You know, career years are just that, career years. Maybe Josh Allen has proven he's one of these elite guys. Maybe he showed improvement, but we saw the absolute best Josh Allen last year. Not just the absolute best Josh Allen, but the absolute best of their secondary, et cetera. So they're a team that could slide back to the pack a little bit. That usually comes in contact with the fact that the division does get a little stronger. The Patriots look a little stronger this year. The Dolphins look a little bit stronger this year. We're not going to talk about the Jets. So you put that in, and those things could have the Bills falling back to earth. That said, with that in case, they're still among the elite teams according to our projections.
Yeah, I'm looking here actually at your projected win totals. You do have Baltimore, number two, actually ahead of KC.
Yeah. But again, if you look, it's like a tenth of a win each. So the tolerances aren't that great with our projections.
Right.
Those are the three teams to beat.
One of the things that struck me when we were talking about, Matt and I were talking about this last week, was again your projection for the Patriots at 9.8 wins.
Yeah.
That's actually fifth most in the league. But one of the things that jumped out to me about them was their schedule ranking was 32nd.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a factor does that play into it?
Mike, can I interrupt real quick, too? Because I heard Aaron on a podcast, I forget which one, you guys have been on so many. He compared the Steelers and Patriots very similarly. You know, that you guys have the defenses kind of hand in hand.
Yeah.
You have the offenses very similar. But New England and Baltimore, this is something I cite all the time on the show, are always at the top of the league in special teams. And as Dale mentioned, the schedule difficulty of New England versus Pittsburgh is very, very the opposite, really.
Right, right. So, I mean, the schedule difficulty really weighs into the projections because what we do is 10,000 simulations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do 10,000 simulations and you get two gimmies against the Jets and you play a softer division, the Steelers benefited from that last year. They had an easy schedule because the NFC East fell apart, et cetera. So that plays into it. One thing that the Patriots have going for them, and this is why I love working for Football Outsiders, because all we talked about was the free agents. Oh, look, they spent a lot of money on Nelson Agholor and Jonnu Smith, and I'm skeptical, and I think a lot of people are skeptical of that. You lose track of the fact that they're getting tons of defenders back. They're getting guys who were Super Bowl-caliber defenders who were there 2018, 2019, took a COVID opt-out for a year, and are now returning or had an injury and are returning. And when you put those guys back into their defense, they go back to having a playoff-caliber defense. Now, once you do that and say, okay, was that free agent class terrible? No, it was a good free agent class. They just spent a zillion dollars on all these guys, but they're definitely upgrades. You put those things together, you factor in a softer schedule, and you have a Patriots team that could surprise, could jump up there and be a better team than Cleveland, who's fashionable, be a better team than the Dolphins, who are still trying to figure out what they have in their quarterback and elsewhere. And that could make the Patriots, of all the things, a Patriots, a stealth surprise team. It's shocking to say that because of the Patriots, but that's what they could be in 2021.
Mike, was it tough to look at those the players that opted out last year and kind of try to project what they're going to be like coming back?
No, I bet.
Yeah, I think what you do is you put in, and what we did is we put them in, there's age regression. There is an age regression in the system. So you say, well, here they are, a year or 2 years older, but they're still that player. It's easier to do that than say, well, what's going to happen with an ACL, et cetera? Because, again, these guys, especially Patriots players, they're going to come back in a high level of conditioning or be released. So it was unique. It was different. But it's within the way the system is designed to say, okay, returning player, returning player, how old are they? Have they gone from 30 to 32, 26 to 28? You can make some projections on that, put them in, and get results that you're comfortable with.
Along those lines, Mike, I mean, obviously projections are very, very difficult. No one can predict the future.
Yes.
But I know you guys projected the Texans without Deshaun Watson. You projected mm-hmm. the Packers with Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
But how do you handle New England, who we mentioned, or San Francisco, Chicago, first-round quarterbacks, you know, when they might take over, things like that?
Well, it's usually, first of all, with the rookies, you kind of have a template you put in for the rookies based on what they're drafted, based on some of the things they did in college and based on their type of play.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, you put in either a mix of the rookie and the starting quarterback, or another thing that we'll do is we'll run some of the projections with the veteran and some of the projections with the rookie, and then you kind of blend them together. An interesting one is the Broncos, and Aaron really went over this with me. We did some projections with Drew Lock for all the games, some projections with Teddy Bridgewater for all the games, and then we put them together. I mean, the Broncos projection, the Broncos come out below 500 team. So that's kind of how you do it. You say, well, how do you manage that? Well, we have now 30-some years of experience in our DVOA database and 18 years at Football Outsiders doing this with a rookie being drafted
mm-hmm.
and a veteran being there. So we have all these things that we can look at in the past and say, how did that actually turn out? How did our projection look? And we can adjust it from there. So on the one hand, it's weird to say, well, what do you do with the Bears with this projection with Andy Dalton and Nick Foles and Fields? And the answer is same thing you did with Trubisky and the veterans and Glennon a couple of years ago. You put them together, you put them out there. And a lot of times the answer to the question is nobody's going to be that fantastic because the veteran isn't that good and the rookie is still learning. So it's not like you're going to get a Patrick Mahomes result out of these guys, and it kind of comes out in the wash.
I'm Dale Lally. He's Matt Williams. Our guest is Mike Tanier from Football Outsiders. Mike, you mentioned the Broncos. They're one of the teams that you guys have there, actually with the same win total as the Steelers at 8.8 for the season.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the difference between Locke and Bridgewater. What was what were the projection totals like? Do you know what the projection totals were like with one versus the other? Because I don't know if there's a real winner there.
Yeah, there's a clear-cut winner. His name is Teddy Bridgewater. Because you look at overall, the Broncos' defense is very strong. Their offense is getting guys back, like Courtland Sutton, who was hurt all last year, who's a very good receiver to go with Jerry Jeudy, and they have a pretty strong offensive line.
Yeah, but will Teddy
and
throw
John
the
Elway
football?
Has, And John Elway for years has been kind of like, if I can just get a guy who can get the ball downfield and take care of the ball, this team's going to go to the playoffs. And he's been unable to find that guy. And he went from Paxton Lynch to Trevor Siemian to Case Keenum to Joe Flacco, et cetera, et cetera. And Teddy Bridgewater's that guy. Teddy Bridgewater's the guy who's going to go out there, take care of the ball for you, not do anything stupid, and think and dunk the ball to his target. So if we run the projection with Bridgewater, they're in a playoff conversation because they're getting so many guys back on defense because they've got some good weapons on offense. When we run with Drew Lock, they're the same old Broncos the last 4 or 5 years, and they're losing these really boring games because their defense is keeping them close. So that's that. We'll see how the Broncos make their decisions. Right now in our projection system, Teddy Bridgewater is the clear-cut winner.
Let's get back to the Ravens a little bit. I mean, they're like a staple for special teams, but that's a small portion of the equation. I think their offensive line should be better. I certainly think their passing game will be better. But you guys are extremely high on them, which I understand. What worries you, and what are their best strengths?
It's almost like you pencil them into the playoffs, and then you see, okay, and then it's time for another reading of the, where's Lamar Jackson's ability to get the ball down the field on the sidelines, on third and long, trailing by whenever, when the defense is taking away the running game. And you have to go back to those conversations overall. But you mentioned the offensive line. They've upgraded the interior offensive line, which was a real problem last year. They had injuries. They had retirements. Their center melted down and started throwing the ball over Lamar's head. They had problems like that. They seem to fix most of those problems. They drafted well. They've added free agents. Then you look at the receiving core. They brought in another receiver, Rashad Bateman, in the draft. They brought in Sammy Watkins, who will be good for 4 games and injured for 13. You've done everything possible at this point to say, okay, Lamar can still run the option game. He can still complete passes over the middle. He can still make plays by buying time and throwing. Can he make those sideline or routine for other quarterback passes? So he knows he's got to improve on it. Looked like he improved on it in the second half of the year. The receivers are there who can do this. They're all veterans now. They're all, it's not a lot of rookies. Hollywood Brown's not a youngster anymore. Neither is Boykin, neither are the guys they drafted last year. It all looks like they should be a team that should be deep into January with the playoffs. So you pencil that in, and we'll see what happens. But like I said, they're near the top of the projections. They're in the conversation with the Chiefs and the Bills. I think they're all going to be in that conversation come January.
Mike, on the other side of the equation, the New Orleans Saints have been a team that have been a factor for the last few years, but also undergoing a quarterback situation there.
Yeah.
What were the projections like in terms of their two quarterbacks, and what differences did that make, if any, really?
It wasn't that big a difference, but it's a clear win for Jameis, and I think a lot of the projections were done with Jameis in there. I don't have Aaron here to vouch for that, but there's kind of like the law of rational decision making, and they say, are you going to start Jameis, or are you going to start the love child? And I keep jumping up and down and saying they're gonna start Taysom. But you know what? I look at the Saints; they're like the Patriots were last year. Tom Brady leaves, Drew Brees leaves. The Patriots are like, we still have a great defense. Saints still have a great defense. Still have a lot of veterans who've been in playoff situations. Patriots last year, Belichick's a genius. He'll figure it out. This kid Stidham is going to be good. Oh, look, they got Cam. They're going to outsmart everybody with Cam. Really didn't work out that way. They kind of got okay quarterbacking from Cam, and Stidham was a mess. Sean Payton right now, I've got Taysom, and I've got Jameis. I don't know if there's a solution between the two. I don't know if you're going to get turnovers or you're just going to be running the wildcat every day. Either way, it looks like that defense will keep them in a lot of games, just like the Patriots won a lot of games last year. But they're actually in a pretty easy division, except for the fact that Tom Brady's ahead of them, and they're going to wind up slotted in second place. And whether or not they make the playoffs is based on whether they find a solution or if a lot of teams in the NFC fall off, which is something that we saw last year.
Yeah, along those lines with Sean Payton, last year we talked about the disaster that New England dealt with. They still won 7 games.
Yeah.
The year before that, the Steelers didn't have a quarterback 2 years ago. They went 8-8. They went 8-8.
Yeah.
I wonder what you guys think the floor is for Belichick, Tomlin, Carroll, Peyton, Harbaugh, that group of Hall of Fame or borderline Hall of Fame coaches.
Yeah, you know what? Andy Reid was like that in Philly for a lot of years until he had this year where everything fall apart and you lose it. So at some point, it's possible to lose the team. The fact is, Tomlin got through the whole Antonio experience, didn't lose the team. I don't think Belichick will ever lose a team because it's like, you know, guys, we're born.
He'll just get a new team.
You just get a new team, right. Peyton's the interesting one because you want to lose the team, throw Taysom Hill out there and run the Wildcat for a year, and then guys are going to start mumbling and grumbling about it. So, but you're right. Those guys build in the idea you're going to win 6, 7, 8 games mm-hmm. no matter what, even if things fall apart, because of the excellence of your system. You mentioned special teams a couple of times. The Ravens and the Patriots are the only teams that are on the top of the special teams list every year, because that goes up and down whether or not your system, your program is in place and the young players are developing, et cetera, et cetera. The great coaches are able to do that and manage that, and the weaker coaches, they might have a great year now and then, but they can't do that year in and year out.
Well, our guest has been Mike Tanier from Football Outsiders. We'd love to sit here and talk football with you for hours, Mike, but we know you got a busy schedule. You got other places to go, but we appreciate you stopping by and talking about the Almanac here and some of the inside information here on Steelers Nation Radio. But good talking to you, Mike.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Take care and enjoy your summer, guys.
You too, man. Take care.
Good stuff there from Mike Tanier.
I could talk hours and hours, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you get a chance, check that out. It's footballoutsiders.com. Even if you don't get the Almanac, join the site. The stats that they have on there. We talk about it all the time.
DVOAs
and all that stuff. We always talk about it on our show here. But check it out. They got a lot of good information on there. I like it better than like Pro Football Focus and some of those.
They've been doing it a lot longer. Yeah. I mean, really, they call Aaron, who we mentioned, the godfather of analytics. I mean, he was doing it well before all these other people, and they do a very, very good job of it. I like that they don't analyze every snap player grade, some of the coverage stuff and offensive line stuff that that the other sites deal with, to me, isn't as accurate, but no, Football Outsiders is outstanding. I mean, I go to their site every day.
Yeah, it's definitely a go-to site for myself as well. But
the Almanac's awesome.
Yeah,
it really is. I mean, even if you just read the Steelers and the AFC North, it's worth your money.
Yeah, absolutely. But that is going to do it for today's show. So for my partner, Matt Williamson, for Jacob Recht here on site, keeping us on the air, I'm Dale Lally. We appreciate you listening to this edition of The Drive on Steelers Nation Radio.